Good morning with KUAC News, I'm Tim Ellis. Low salmon runs are limiting sport and subsistence harvests statewide, and now sport fishing for king salmon is looking bleak in south-central Alaska after recent closures announced by the Department of Fish and Game. All sport fishing for kings on the Kenai River, including catch and release, closed Wednesday, and farther to the north, king fishing will close beginning this morning on the Susitna and Little Susitna rivers, as well as the Big Sioux's tributaries. A subsistence fishery on the upper Yentl is also set to close early Monday. The more recent closures follow earlier, broader restrictions for popular streams off the Parks Highway and elsewhere. Here's area management biologist Sam Ivey.
It is pretty widespread. As far as I know, we're the last area up here in the north to close to fishing for wild king salmon. The only fisheries open now are our hatchery stocked.
Biologists say fish counts have shown far fewer king salmon swimming upstream to breeding grounds than were expected. The closures for the Susitna and Little Sioux rivers are set to run through July 13th and to the end of July for the Kenai River. The Army Corps of Engineers halted cleanup of contaminated soil near Birch Lake last fall when workers uncovered buried junk that included barrels with residues of the banned pesticides DDT and chlordane. Beth Astley's the Corps' project manager. She says contractor workers discovered the junk while excavating soil contaminated by leaky fuel storage tanks in an area that's now part of the Birch Lake Recreation Area.
We ran into some trash, some buried metal, some drums that were empty. And when we got to some rusted out cans of insecticide that were labeled as containing DDT, we stopped.
Astley says Anchorage-based Bristol Environmental Remediation Services had to stop excavating the site because its contract called for removal of soil contaminated by fuel.
So we stopped, we sampled, and at that point, we decided to terminate the removal effort until we could determine the full extent of this buried debris that may contain pesticides.
The Birch Lake cleanup is one of several the Corps conducted in recent years along the old Fairbanks to Haines pipeline, a 626-mile, 8-inch line built by the military in the 1950s and shut down in 1973. Astley and other Corps officials talked about the discovery of the toxins last week at a public meeting in Delta Junction.
The pesticide contamination is different because it requires us to ship soil out of the state for disposal because there's no permitted landfills in the state of Alaska that will accept this soil contaminated with pesticides.
Astley says workers found the debris about 3 feet below the surface in what appears to be a trash pit between where two large above-ground fuel storage tanks were located. She couldn't say exactly how much of the debris is buried at the site. She says a geophysical survey the Corps conducted last month may help agency officials estimate the amount of excavation that'll be needed to remove the junk, which includes some crushed 55-gallon drums that may have been used to mix the pesticides.
So we have a better idea now of the area that contains this buried waste, but we don't know if how much of that might contain residue from pesticide drums that were crushed and disposed of.
Astley says the DDT and perhaps the chlordane were being used to kill mosquitoes. That was a common use for DDT from when it was developed in the 1940s until it was outlawed in 1972. It's categorized as a carcinogen, and tests have shown other health impacts. Chlordane was used as a pesticide from 1948 until it was banned in 1988 after tests linked it to neurological and reproductive system disorders. But Astley says the toxins shouldn't present a health threat now that the junk's been covered with a plastic liner and reburied with clean fill.
And so now the next step is to go back and to investigate the extent of this buried debris and to remove any hazardous debris or soil remaining at that site.
Astley says once that analysis is done, Corps officials will develop a new contract to remove the junk and contaminated soil. She says if all goes well, that work could be done in the summer of 2020. Astley's state counterpart agrees the junk won't threaten human health, both because it's been reburied and because it appears there were only small residual amounts of the pesticides in the crushed drums and cans.
This isn't something that's on the surface. This isn't something that if you were to be on site, you would encounter. So as far as an immediate threat to human health and the environment, that's not the case.
Danielle Duncan is a contaminated site program specialist with the State Department of Environmental Conservation, and she's worked with Astley on the cleanup projects. She says the Corps' tests showed the presence of pesticides in soil around the buried junk, but she thinks it's unlikely that it's seeped into the groundwater or the lake's surface water. And she says DEC will likely conduct tests to confirm that.
That is on our radar, as is groundwater.
Astley says the Corps now plans to study another lesser-known site near Tenderfoot Creek, just north of Shaw Creek, where the pipeline burst in 1971 and spewed fuel into the creek. Earlier this month, the University of Alaska Fairbanks participated in an international school in Utqiagvik. Alaska's Energy Desk reporter Ravenna Koenig has this report on who was there and what they did.
The school gave early career researchers a broad view of the Arctic coastal system and how it's changing, along with some different methods of studying it. It's the second year of a collaboration between UAF, the University of Calgary in Canada, and the University of Tromsø in Norway. Brian Moorman from the University of Calgary is one of the instructors. He studies permafrost and glacier hydrology, but the professor's experiences really range.
We have people that are atmospheric scientists, and we have people that are remote sensors that use satellites to view the world, and there's people that get right down and dirty in the mud and sea ice.
Those instructors taught students how to collect physical data in the Arctic, as well as how to use satellite and drone tools. Cornelius Quigley is a student from the University of Tromsø and works primarily with satellites. He said that being out in the field with a diverse group of scientists was a departure from his usual work.
In my area of research, you really do only speak to people who do what you do. But now at field school, I'm working with people who are geologists or, you know, people who've never seen satellite data. But still, they would have a different perspective on the entire thing.
The first year of the field school was held on an icebreaker off the coast of Norway. Next year, it will be held in the Yukon Territory in Canada. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Utqiagvik.
And I'm Tim Ellis.